Welcome to Building Tomorrow, a show where we envision what the future could look like if we protect the freedom to innovate. The world is getting older. Our median age has been steadily rising for generations. Not only does that mean that we'll face a serious depopulation crisis by the middle of the 21st century, but the fact that we have fewer kids means that the population in developed countries will skew ever more older. In Japan, the median age has climbed from 29 in 1970 to 48 today and will rise to 55 by 2050. That means in Japan there will be as many people age 56 and up as there are ages 1 through 55. That's incredible. And we're not as far behind as you might think here in the US, with a median age of 38 projected to climb higher, albeit a bit slower. Now, an older population will mean new challenges for elder care. The cost of nursing homes is already skyrocketing under pressure from the leading edge of retiring baby boomers and tight labor markets. There are already too many stories of senior citizens slipping through the cracks of the healthcare system because their families, well, they can't visit the nursing home every day. So these early health warning signs are simply missed. And as the number of children per family falls even further, the odds that seniors will outlive their one or two children, it'll grow. Perhaps as many as a quarter of senior citizens will outlive their single child, along with the growing number of those who never had any children at all. Be particularly vulnerable to this problem. But there is hope that we can mitigate some of these problems in the future. If Japan and Korea are a picture of what our gray-haired future population looks like, they're also a place where we can catch a glimpse of the future of elder care technology. One of the most promising technologies in the field is passive health monitoring. Now, these are systems that constantly track a patient's health rather than relying on, you know, periodic visits to the doctor, at best, to catch health problems. Now, I have two interviews that I conducted at TechCrunch Disrupt this year with startups from Japan and South Korea that use basic home appliances in new ways, including a television that tracks your eye movements and can accurately predict early onset dementia and Alzheimer's.
I'm sitting here with Leland Cresswell, the VP, AVP from WeCare.
The VP.
The VP.
Only one.
So extra special here. So Leland, what does WeCare, what's its vision? What's its promise?
So WeCare, the promise is that we're able to detect dementia in seniors at extremely early stages when we can actually do something about it.
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, with my grandfather, he passed away from Alzheimer's. And one of the main reasons why was because our family didn't want to accept that he had it.
Mm.
And so by the time he actually entered the healthcare system,
mm-hmm.
he was already at, like, you know, stage 50, where you can't really do anything anymore anyways, right?
Yeah.
But if we can catch Alzheimer's and dementia very early, then we're able to go to the exercises and go to the medications and all of the support that can allow these sorts of, you know, patients to actually live very healthy and productive lives much, much longer than if you don't catch it early.
Yeah.
There's a huge, huge difference. So that is our mission. That's our big focus.
What's the tech? Like, obviously, I can see a brochure here, but our listeners can't. What's the technology you're using to detect?
Yeah, so it's really interesting, but a lot of the signs that we can use for this detection is based on the way that someone's eyes are moving, and specifically their gaze.
Interesting.
Yes. So we use our deep learning AI along with a stream of video that we take from their home, usually through you know, like a video camera, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
4K resolution, something like that. Hopefully, it gives us the best accuracy.
Sure.
But we watch the way that their head moves, and we watch the way that their eyes move, and that gives us enough data to actually begin to predict if they have some form of dementia or even vertigo as well. So, you know, the main thing with this, actually, the really interesting thing is that when you're moving your head and when you're looking at something, there's two different types of tracking that your eyes do, okay? The first one is called just a target tracking, and that's when you have a moving object, okay? So, you know, think about, like, hunter-gatherers, right? They're out there and they're tracking the deer or whatever, you know, jumping around. Your eyes move very smoothly following the target. The second form of eye movement is called saccades, and that's basically going from one object to another very, very rapidly. So, you know, you're walking down the street and you see a pretty lady, boom, you're snapping over there, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a quick movement of your eyes, right?
Yeah.
And so with the target tracking, ideally what you want to see is just a smooth tracking where the eyes are following the line in a very optimal way. But what we see with vertigo and what we see with dementia and Alzheimer's is that the eye will kind of come off of the track that it should be following. It will kind of, you know, bob up and down a little bit, you know, and there's a lot of research about this, about the specific movement patterns that you can use to determine what exactly is going wrong with this person. And then in the second, form of eye movement, the saccades.
Yeah.
Oh, it's always so hard to pronounce that. but in saccades, you want to look at erratic motion. So normally with saccades, your eye jumps directly from one object to another. And so on a graph, you'd see that as like a spike in movement and then just flat.
Uh-huh.
But what you see with someone who has dementia, early signs of dementia or vertigo, is that you see the spike, but the spike might be way off target. So like they're looking way to the left of the target that they want to look at, and then they look back. Mm-hmm. Or you might see a very erratic movement, which would be, you know, they move to the target and then their eye is kind of like spasming around the target for a microsecond or two.
Yeah.
And then it comes back.
Yeah. Now, is this something that the way it's framed in some of your literature is that, you know, our senior citizen is watching television. There's a camera watching their eyes as they watch television, and you're able to predict based on the eye movements. Would there be benefit in having like a preset program? Like, so there's a program where you know exactly what's going on the screen that should be attracting their attention. And thus, so that's kind of provides a baseline. Here's what a healthy person looks like when they watch this program. Here's what someone who has early dementia or vertigo is seeing and how their eyes track. Is that part of your plans in the long run?
Oh, yes, exactly. Okay. You know, it's good that you brought that up. So, there is a test that we currently use with the TV monitor or with the computer screen, where we push the test to the screen, and then it will have basically just a very simple red dot that the senior needs to either follow, and that's to get the tracking motion, or they'll have different dots popping up at different locations to get the saccades, right?
Okay.
So that's what we're currently doing. In the future, though, exactly as you said, for different movies and for different television programs and et cetera, we have already actually found in our research that there is a very, very, very standard average of eye movement across that media. And this is what's used, of course, for like advertising online, right? Advertiser will look at eye hotspots, you know, where people normally look the websites, right? So this sort of technology exists already. And this is also what we want to apply to TV programs and movie programs. Mm. It's not as specific as the red dot test, but it does allow us to actually use the programs that are currently being run on that senior's, you know, television or whatever, and to highly correlate it with their eye movements. It will take us much more data doing it in that way compared to the dot test, but with a few hours of data and following a program that we have already analyzed, it should be possible. So that's in progress right now, but it's really good that you brought that up.
But it has the advantage also of being less
intrusive, right?
Less intrusive.
Yes, very passive. Yes.
They can just do what they're already doing.
Exactly. Passive is the main goal of our entire system, because we know that seniors don't want to be pulling out their smartphone for applications and stuff. A lot of seniors are capable of using apps fine, but some of them, or many of them, I mean, my grandma has no idea how to use it, and she doesn't have any interest, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And you ask them to download and see a specific program they're not interested in.
Yeah.
You know, I want to watch my, NCIS.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yes. For sure.
So what's the use case for this? Like, is this a matter of, you imagine someday contracting with like nursing homes to provide this service on a contractual basis for all of their residents? Or individual families, who's going to be using this software?
Yeah, so there's two main use cases that we're currently trialing out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of course we're still in the stage where we're trying to figure out where exactly our market is, right?
Yeah.
The first big one is direct subscriptions to the subscribers, to the seniors themselves. In many cases, it would actually be with their family or their guardians,
right? Power of attorney.
You know, the people who are actually, you know. But the idea there is that they pay us a subscription, and then we say, we will now provide you with protection and early warning about dementia. And we're also looking at packaging our dementia protection or our screening together with other systems that are already being used. Mm-hmm. For example, like an alarm bell or alarm button. Something around their neck. They press the button, they get an emergency vehicle right away. In the Canadian market, which is, I'm more familiar with the Canadian market compared to the American market, but people are paying from $60 to $100 a month just for a button that if they press it, they'll get an emergency vehicle right away.
Right.
So we're looking at packaging that sort of functionality with our dementia to get into the market.
Yeah.
And then the second main market that we're looking at is directly with the governments themselves. Mm. We have an official relationship with the Songnam Municipal Government over in Korea.
Okay.
So they are actually supporting us and paying for us to do our initial beta testing. Mm. But in the future, we want to go up to governments and say, hey, if you deploy these devices to all of your seniors, we can confidently say that we will reduce the likelihood of dementia or we will, we will prolong the healthy period of these people who are suffering dementia and keep them out of the healthcare system for, on average, 30% longer or 50% longer. And then government says to us, great, that saves us a lot of money. We'll pay you on the back end to handle all of our seniors, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the two main markets that we're looking at.
What's the time frame? I know you're still pretty early stage here. You said you have this agreement with the municipal government in Korea.
Songnam, yes.
Are you actually trialing the product in people's homes at the moment?
Exactly. That's exactly what we're doing right now. There's a lot of interviews going on with the seniors as they use the devices, or as they use the video to see if it's intrusive in their lives at all, and to show the data to the doctors, of course. Mm-hmm. And we're also still trying to get the accuracy to be as high as possible with no false positives, because that's very important. Though, in our case, the false positive is not as big of a deal as it would be in a medical situation, like in a clinic, because false positive, you go to your doctor, oh, no, you're okay. That's fine. It's an hour or two out of your day, but that's okay.
Right.
For our timeline, we are doing the trialing right now in Korea actively. We hope to start a trial in Canada next year, quarter two, 2020. Yep. And then also we're going to Singapore to start a trial in 2020, quarter two as well. We're looking at America as being another place maybe we can start a trial, but we don't have a lot of traction here. So we're not really sure if we can actually do something on that early of a time scale, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
You do it where you have the relationships and you can always,
Try it here later. Yeah, for a startup like us, it's very important for us to try to use our resources efficiently, right? And trying to throw money out there and get trials going in a bunch of markets, it's hard, right?
So South Korea and other parts of East Asia have a particularly large senescence problem. A growing elderly population as a ratio of the national population.
For sure. Yes.
That's going to be in the future for many more countries over the next half century.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Can you talk some about what role did that play and why you guys are situated in South Korea?
Well, South Korea is following Japan. It's becoming a super aged society, right? And so our CEO had a lot of expertise and experience in the healthcare industry, specifically around using IoT devices in the lives of seniors. And so he just saw that, the senior market is going to be huge. And it's not something that you need any sort of calculation to understand. It's like there's this many people at this age right now.
Yeah.
And so from our initial research that we did 2 years ago, is that not a lot of companies were really moving on this potential, right? We didn't see anything coming to market. We didn't see any market leaders really popping up. And we spoke to the doctors and the senior centers and everyone who's there. And we saw a very slow uptake of technology, So yeah, this looks like something that we could disrupt, especially with a highly passive system.
Yeah.
And that's why we decided to get into it. And of course, I live in Korea and the CEO is Korean. So it just made sense for us to start in Korea. And I think more than planning, it's kind of happenstance that we are a Korean startup and that we start in that market.
Yeah.
Canada and America are the same, right? Because baby boomers are coming in, they're entering their silver years. already, or they're coming into them, and they're going to want to avoid dementia, because I know that from back in Korea, I have a Korean wife, right? And my mother-in-law, Korean mother-in-law, the only thing that she's worried about is dementia and Alzheimer's. Like, she's not worried about, you know, losing her ability to walk or this stuff. She's worried about forgetting about her family, because, like, you know, and especially as you get older, I think kind of us young folks, maybe we're too focused on work or other things, you know, it might not occur to us, but especially for older people, family and connections and the ability to interact with your family is so important. And if you lose your memory, that's it. Like, it's like dying, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Anyone who's had a family, close family member, a grandparent, or a parent who has gone through dementia, Alzheimer's, one of these disorders, and seen, I mean, it leaves a devastating personal trail through a family. It's very hard. You know, what price are you willing to put on giving some peace of mind that, hey, here's an extra tool that will help me detect this kind of disorder early, so that maybe this time won't be quite so horrible? I mean, that's a pretty good sales pitch.
Right? I mean, if I could say to someone, you know, you put this video camera in your house, you pay us a little bit of money each month, and we're confident that we can catch any sort of problems with potential Alzheimer's dementia early, and we can help you to basically reverse that, or to just, like, you know, keep it at a level where you're okay. If I can say that to them, I mean, it makes me happy. It makes them happy. It's just a win-win-win, right?
Yeah.
And that's where you want to be as a startup. You want to be where deploying your product will make you money, but it's also going to provide real immediate value to the people that you're working with, right?
We have this funny juxtaposition in tech culture at the moment, where people's relationship to tech, which, on the one hand, people love adopting Internet of Things smart devices in their home. We like talking to Siri on our smartphones, having Alexa, having our, you know, Amazon's smart speakers or Google smart speakers in our houses. On the flip side, people are very concerned about surveillance, intrusion, the fact that people might be listening to them. So it's funny, there's a bit of a cognitive dissonance. We both want these things. We're also worried about people listening in on us.
Yes.
As a technology that's predicated on watching people, what's your response to folks who are concerned about that kind of surveillance?
Well, first off, I completely understand where those people are coming from.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want someone to be, you know, peeping on me when I'm just doing stuff at home, right? Yeah. So I totally understand where they're coming from. And, you know, from our side, we are doing everything we can to make sure that the video itself never leaves the device. Like, it doesn't hit the internet. It doesn't go to our cloud servers where it can be, you know, hacked, right? Anyone who says that their cloud system is 100% hack free, and they're just, like, they're totally bullshitting you, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen breaches of social security numbers and all this other very, very private data from millions of people, from the largest companies. We see it all the time. So anyone who says that data that is out there in a cloud server or whatever is secure is just bullshitting you, because it's not.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going from the get-go, we're just saying, okay, the data is never going to actually leave that device. Mm. The only thing that's going to come out of it are the outcomes. Like, the actual metadata that we're using to say that this person, you know, probably has, you know, dementia, or probably has vertigo, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then as soon as that data has been used by the doctor or by the family or whatnot, then we just get rid of it if it's not needed, right? That metadata. So, I mean, it's not going to be personally identifiable. And, you know, this is something every time I meet with one of our beta testers or a potential beta tester, you know, back in Korea, I say to them, the first thing I say, I know that having a camera, you know, just here in your house, I know the feeling could be that you're under surveillance, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if there was any other way we could do this more effectively, we would. But the video data is required, and we keep it on the device there, and it never goes out of there. And that's really all we can do, right? I mean, you know, surveillance, you should be worried about surveillance, right? There's a lot of crazy stuff going on, but it's going to be required for...
Yeah,
you know, things like this, right? Like, we can't see your eyes. How do we know that you've got, you know, problems, right?
Yeah. And I mean, there, at the end of the day, too, if you go to your doctor and have them do a check for early signs of dementia or vertigo, well, they're also generating medical data, personal data, identifiable data that gets put somewhere that can be hacked. which has been hacked
yeah.
previously. Like, all of these things generate data.
Yeah, that yeah. data is much more personal. Like, the data that the doctor would create when he's doing these tests for you and yeah. then attaching to your file is much, much more identifiable than the data that we're getting.
Yeah.
Because the data we're getting, we're only pulling out the metadata. Mm. And then later on, it's attached to your patient, you know, portfolio or whatever. And at that point, it's the doctor's concern. It's the hospital's concern to protect it, right? So, yeah. you know, from our perspective, like as a company, we just make sure that the personally identifiable data never actually gets out there, right? And if someone, and you know, the doctor or your family or whatever, someone else wants to take that data and you know, attach it to something, then that's not us, right? That's yeah. the doctor or the family or whatever.
What's the reaction been like from medical professionals, from doctors to, you know, you have someone who's, you know, part of your trial system in South Korea, they've got a warning sign for early stage dementia. You then tell them to go to your doctor. What's doctor's response been to that situation?
Yeah, yeah. So from the doctors, especially the research doctors, they're always cool as cucumbers. They come in, we say, oh, this is what we want to do. Let's work together, you know, and they're like, okay, all right. These are the tests we're doing already. Okay, yeah. You know, like working with them, I never got like the feeling of hype that I get from the you know, the tech guys that we work with.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
when I go to a tech guy or like a developer and say, hey, we want to change the world by preventing dementia or, you know, helping to prevent it, right? They're like,
right.
yes, this is a good mission, right? The doctors are just like, yeah, okay, cool. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So but the reaction is generally positive.
Okay.
The like this exact technology is not in distribution. It's like not being commercially deployed anywhere in Korea and at least to my knowledge, like in the world right now on a scale. So, you know, most doctors don't really, you know about it before we come to them, right? Because it's not deployed. What they have these devices, like these like little headsets that are basically they're stripped down VR, you know, headsets basically.
Okay.
That are just designed to track eyes very accurately. And these companies that are selling this device like $5,000-$6,000 for the device, okay? For the device that costs like $100 to put together. And some software that is just like so, so simple.
Yeah.
You know, literally they're just, the software, the only thing it does is just pulling the data into a graph. And the graph is being used by a doctor and that is it.
Mm.
We're talking about $5,000-$6,000 for this like little software device package, right? It's just mind blowing, okay?
Mm.
But, you know, so we say to them, we want to use just video. They say, oh, that's interesting, because they don't know that it can be done with AI in some cases.
Right.
The guys, the doctors who are keeping up on AI and are actually using it in their profession, they say, yes, yeah, okay, this is doable. Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
And let's try getting it out there. The doctors we talk to who aren't aware of the state of AI are kind of skeptical. They're like, do you have enough resolution, you know? And
yeah.
What about their head? Their head's moving around. But we need to strap something, you know, we need to strap their head in, right?
Right,
you know?
Right.
Where's the straps, right? Where's the headgear and all this stuff, right?
Yeah. Interesting. Now, but you haven't had any pushback from doctors? So the ones who aren't particularly familiar with the technology, have you had push? They see it as like competition for what they're doing in the office. I mean, are there any concerns that
not competition.
If you're doing it, people won't come to see us or anything like that?
If you spoke to the guys who are selling those headset devices,
yeah,
lots of pushback. They'll sure. say, "Wow, no, you need this sort of accuracy and blah blah blah." But no, from the doctors, they don't care.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
If it helps their patient and if it gets them data that they can act on, they're happy.
Yeah.
And especially the doctors that are directly working with the families, you know, like local doctors, right? Like just local family doctors. They're happy to look at the new stuff we're doing.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, there's always been at least in the U.S., I don't know if it's how similar it is in Canadian or South Korean markets. There's among medical device startups, there's always concern about, well, even using that framing, medical device. Because once you're a medical device, then you have to get FDA approval, which
exactly.
is a very long,
yes.
expensive process. So I don't know if that's also true in Canada. South Korea, you can inform us about that. But then in the U.S., like, do you class this as a medical device? Or is this something more like a wearable, like a Fitbit? Like, how do you think of this product in the U.S. context?
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Categorized as a medical device.
Yeah.
We knew from the get-go, and especially, like I said, my CEO He has so much experience in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And Korea actually has tighter regulations. I mean, they're based off the FDA, mm-hmm. but I mean, they're really tight. They're mm-hmm. really tight for getting new devices into the market. So we knew from the get-go that we didn't want to be classified as an actual clinical device.
Sure.
So instead, we just say, hey, we have really great accuracy. And like I said, false positive, no problem. You know, you waste a little bit of your time, but as long as we keep, you know, you come in like one day false positive, another day false positive. Okay, no, that's not good, right? But
right.
I mean, having 1 in 1,000 people get a false positive every once in a while is no problem for us, right? And but yeah, we don't want to get into the whole FDA thing because there's no real need for it.
Yeah.
You know, preventative, it's not medicine, but preventative healthcare, we call it healthy care. Okay, healthy care. Mm-hmm. It means keeping people healthy, right? Before they get sick.
Right.
It's all about just watching and processing and analyzing to the best of our ability as accurately as possible, and then the healthcare system can take over. And mm-hmm. so we really are, and I think that this is just something that hasn't really been available in the past. You know, this sort of like healthcare has always really required like very strong doctor, you know, doctor leading, you know what I mean?
Right.
But with our system, because it can be done by yourself or even just as passive, right? We don't need to be in the healthcare system. We can just be there, you know, in your home, protecting you, trying to protect you from dementia by detecting it early and by predicting it early.
Hmm. So in terms of accuracy, is it like how comparable is it to the, you know, the device you just described that doctors use with the, you know, the $5,000 whatever? Is it comparable in accuracy to detecting signs of early dementia? Or I suppose, are you willing to put up with a slightly less accuracy on the healthy care side, because like you said, the false positive is not it's not as big of a deal as a false negative. So compare your device in terms of its efficacy to mm-hmm. the devices that doctors currently use to diagnose dementia.
Yeah, sure. So like I said, we're not getting into the healthcare side of
right.
things.
It's an opposite side of a divide yes. that you're not. But,
exactly,
yeah.
exactly. So the devices.
Is it like medical grade, even if it's not medical care?
Well, I mean, our opinion is that it's like worldwide cutting edge technology. That's where we're at in terms of how effective it is and the level that our researchers are working at. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the quality is equal to or greater than any sort of healthcare device you see.
Yeah.
But the devices that are used in the clinic and in the hospital to say with 100% certainty you have this level of dementia or you have this sort of vertigo.
Yeah.
That is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So if you look at our accuracy, it is highly accurate, but it is not accurate enough to say, based only on that, that you absolutely have this sort of vertigo, or you absolutely have this amount or this level of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Sure.
Instead, we are accurate enough to very confidently say, you very, 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 very likely have dementia, and you really need to get your ass down to the doctor's clinic where you can put yourself through one of these like $20,000-$30,000 devices that actually give you the like 100% yes, you do have it.
Right.
Because it's the same thing with like MRI. You can't go in for an MRI like if you have a cold or something, you know what I mean? Like you don't, it's like, oh, you know, I feel, oh, my finger's a little bit sore. I'm going to go down to the MRI and scan it, right? You know, it's like an entire different level. It's steps, right?
Right.
So we want to be the ultra high quality step that you can just use passively in your home without like buying a $30,000 piece of equipment and hiring a doctor to sit there and wait for you to feel, you know, a sore thumb or something.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, folks who have, they test their blood sugar. Well, there's much more, you know, closer to 100% accuracy insulin tests
with
highly expensive medical devices in the hospital. And that's good. That's where they should be. But you also want to be able to test frequently with a device that ordinary people can afford in the home. And we already kind of recognize that distinction there. Same thing should be true with dementia. Well, thank you so much for your time, Leland. It was really enlightening, and I really appreciate you talking to us.
This is why I love covering emerging technology. From this tech to last week's episode about using smartphones to stop cholera epidemics, it's a field full of brilliant people working incredibly hard to make the world an incrementally better place. Our next short interview replaces a television with a mirror. a digital concierge powered by AI would answer seniors' questions about the weather, the news, and so on while they do their, you know, skincare routine or put on their clothes. But it would also take pictures of their faces, checking for sudden changes in skin coloration, which medical researchers have found can be used to check blood pressure non-invasively, potentially providing early warning about high blood pressure or even serious heart events.
I'm here with Keith Schellen, who is the Director for International Business Development for Hanamura. Keith, thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you.
So can you describe in just a few minutes what it is that Hanamura is trying to do with this Mirror Concierge system?
Mirror Concierge is a face and voice interface. It has multiple uses. And what we've been highlighting today is Mirror Concierge as a health provider. In Japan, the population is increasing. That's not true. The population is decreasing and the elderly are increasing the number of people. And so Prime Minister Abe has an initiative called Society 5.0. And basically he's trying to take AI, IoT, big data, and things like that, using drones and trying to figure out how to use these to help the aged population. And one of the things that they show on their promotion video is a doctor in a mirror. And they show this older woman that's, showed the granddaughter out the door. In Japan, lots of age of families live together, the grandparents with the parents and with the children, grandchildren. And so grandmother lets the granddaughter out the door, and then she goes to the computer and she sits down and she talks to a doctor on the computer. But the doctor is actually an animated character that she's seeing on the computer. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're taking an avatar and a voice, and there are lots of different faces, lots of different voices we can give it. But what it's really doing, it's keeping the privacy of the doctor that they're working with, so that, literally the person could be at home in their pajamas probably, and it wouldn't really matter. What really matters is him seeing the patient and seeing their face color. And with the camera, they're actually able to open their mouth and see down their throat a little bit. Oh. And then this particular device, which was made by a company or a medical university in Japan, is able to check your heart rate, your pulse, your blood pressure, and stress level.
From video it can check?
Just from the video, yes, okay. Just from the camera. And it's a new technology that they developed, and you can see here it is looking at different colors in the face and how the colors change. It's able to understand what their blood pressure is and what their heart rate is.
So now, do they take I've done the demonstration here where you stand, it scans you for it watches you for 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
And then it kind of watches from a baseline how you're over time, how your skin color.
My understanding from the technology, from the explanation I received, it's basically taking quick photos of your face, and that the colors in your face are changing very quickly. Yeah. And that change of the coloring in your face gives them the ability to be able to understand your blood pressure.
This is being made in partnership, you said, with a medical university?
It's a medical university in Japan. Okay. And basically, they came to Hanamura and they ask us, okay, we have this technology, how can we use it in real life, And that's how we came about being involved in this.
So the idea is you're a child, you have an elderly parent who, in the U.S. context, it's much less likely that, elderly parents live with their children anymore. So, you've got a parent who's maybe in a assisted living facility, but you want to be able to have some sense of how are they doing? What's a baseline rate for their, not medical information per se, I suppose, but pre-medical information. You want to keep kind of tabs, make sure they're okay. How do you go about marketing this system to them potentially?
Well, ideally, the marketing would be in several areas. Actually, one person came by earlier today, and they were talking about the insurance industry. And that this could actually be a very large cost-cutting application for the insurance industries. Instead of them having to actually going and see a doctor,
right,
you know, on a weekly basis, depending on their condition, you know, they can just go in front of the mirror and do it, and the data would be sent into the doctor. And so the insurance company would cut their costs because of that.
Sure.
It could have many implications.
You have the potential advantage too, I imagine, for, I mean, right now there's a recommended schedule for the elderly to go see or have in larger care facilities, for having a nurse come and check vital information every so often, every week, every month. But in theory, with this technology, you can do that, or at least get some of that information constantly, every day. So you're able to detect things quicker, and having to wait for the week to notice, oh, you know, for the last week, your blood pressure has been spiking. We can address that more rapidly in theory. So I imagine it could be good for care as well, better care and cost savings on both ends. Right? Yeah.
As you can see here, they actually call it the daily checkup.
Oh, okay.
And basically, as you go in the morning after your bath or shower and you're brushing your hair, she's getting her face scanned. And she's also standing on top of a scale here, which is fed into the database, and all of that data is stored. It can be stored locally on an app that you can have, that they have developed now for the phone and for an iPad. Or it could be stored in the cloud, or it could actually be set up where it would be sent to her doctor or his or her doctor.
Yeah. What's the current prototype rollout plan like in Japan? I mean, are there some facilities that are trialing it right now? Is it, you're still hoping to get it into homes or into facilities?
I would say right now, this particular use of a doctor concierge is being used in the model homes. They call model homes in Japan.
Okay.
Each of the major companies, they have these areas where they're prototypes of their
like a home of the future of thing. Okay.
And a lot of companies have come to Hanamura asking to have these put into their bathrooms. And yes,
that's it. Well, Keith, thank you so much for your time. I wish you all the best, and our listeners, I think, have really enjoyed hearing about the product. So thank you.
For me, the most exciting thing about this tech is that for every application I can imagine, there are dozens I can't even begin to think of. I mean, imagine the future in which your smart clothing and accessories, which power themselves from the friction generated by the fibers rubbing against each other while you walk, is able to track your temperature, eye movement, blood pressure, and really just get a constant real-time picture of your health. And the AI then monitors changes in your health baseline for concerning signs and kicks those to your physician for consultation. We could stop or mitigate so many heart attacks, strokes, catch cancer earlier, prevent repetitive use injuries for athletes and workers, and so much more. But, and this is a million-dollar coordinating conjunction, even as we develop that technology, and what I just laid out should be possible in our lifetimes, there's a huge barrier that prevents that from happening. The Food and Drug Administration. The FDA has incredibly onerous regulations on medical devices that stymie innovation and ultimately cause unnecessary suffering and even deaths on the massive scale. It delays innovation, everything from breast pumps to insulin pumps. The future I just laid out could never happen because the FDA has erected a high wall between the rapidly innovating world of wearables and other consumer devices, like I just described in this episode, you know, smartwatches, Fitbits, and the like. A high wall between those wearables and consumer applications and medical devices. Every startup I spoke to avoids coming even close to the medical device field like a plague, just because of the regulatory morass and the powerful incumbent interests involved. And as a result, there's very little interaction between all your wearables, the data they generate, and the healthcare system. It means that the data can't make its way through this non-porous, artificially erected barrier. Life-saving and life-improving innovations are being delayed or limited for woefully inadequate reasons. And go back and listen to episode 32 if you want to know more about how that world works, or doesn't, as the case may be. But know that we can do better, that there are promising innovators working on technologies that will improve your and my health prospects in the future if only we let them. As always, but especially today, until next week, be well. Thanks for listening. Building Tomorrow is produced by Tess Terrible. If you enjoy Building Tomorrow, please subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about libertarianism, find us on the web at www.libertarianism.org.